Mark, I have this idea.
Okay, Les, what is it?
Okay, now, like, we have a bunch of recordings of Bucky Fuller, right?
Right.
And we've had recordings of this guy who's been with him for 30 years.
Right, Mr. Will.
And with Mr. Juno,
okay, yeah,
who's
right.
been with him for a little while. Pretty right. philosophical man, with several people discussing themselves about him. Why don't we do a radio program about Buckminster Fuller visits Fairbanks?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea. Okay, I mean, it's going to take some fantastic production, late nights, you know, sessions and all that.
Well, we can live on 22 hours a day, you know that.
Oh, sure, right, if we organize it around our... If we live in the production room while putting in the floor.
Sure. Well, then, let's listen to these people some more, okay?
Okay.
Antipathetic to science and they would argue that, in fact, taking a course in science is sufficient reason to prove that their antipathy is reasonable, you know. I don't see how... Well, to understand what Bucky is saying, I think one must face up to doing some work in the disciplines, and discipline in that real sense, discipline, in its best sense, which is it has a bit of ugly shading to it. It's hard, right? Discipline is hard, and face up to learning some of the math, learning some of the chemistry, learning some of the biology, the physics, learning them, really learning them. And it doesn't mean only throwing oneself on the altar of a class. It does mean developing. It does mean developing what? Relevant. It does mean developing good classes. They don't always have to be new. I find oftentimes, and Herman mentioned that this evening. He said, "Well, these tenured professors teaching the same thing over and over," and I do not find that in chemistry. In fact, I have yet to be able to use a set of notes throughout, from one year to the next. And this is the devilishly hard thing for me, and if there's anything that keeps me good, to whatever extent I'm good, it's because I have to continually sit down and redo. And part of this is my quality of
Morass. Really.
This is good.
Anyway, thanks very much.
Right.
And
it's a pleasure.
Mr. Fuller, or Red City couldn't come up tonight.
I will. Well,
maybe we'll have him for a guest.
I think he's having a good
time.
Rest for for tomorrow in Anchorage. You know. Yeah, I'd like to see him get back up here.
What I've constantly had trouble trying to do whenever you or anyone was talking here was, you'd say this is the case, you know, and I have to remember to tell myself this is his opinion. You know, this is what he thinks. And
can you play back to me the way I sound? Then I need to listen to myself and probably and
well, you were saying,
modify.
You were saying just about teaching. If anything, if the reason that made me have anything say anything relevant or whatever is that I did such and such. And that's your opinion. And that's not a. I mean, I have to tell myself, you know, that this is not fact. This is opinion, right?
The buildings, you know, to get there. So now they're putting a dome up, and all the snow is going to be on the dome, and they're going to work underneath with their buildings. And so I just got talking with Bucky this evening that, you know, we should be doing well. Let's do it at Barrow or here or there.
It's just my problem, my personal problem.
And this chap happened to arrive who said they've been thinking about it over the new school. They want to build a school building similar to many buildings in warmer climates, you know, where it's sort of an open school and not tall buildings but spread out. And if they could put it all under a dome, like, It'd be great. And after all, the Dew Line Dome is up at Barrow, and why should it just be there for that? That's the one for something important.
Well, from my study, from what little I've learned in my ecology class here, they found that when you heat up a certain area of, say, tundra, it has a tendency to start sinking, and that's why I was wondering about what temperature was going to be kept at.
There's a great potential for fertility in trying to identify with our biological context. And last fall, I really hit a peak in trying to get away from man orientation. Simultaneously with the beginning of this whammy program, the medical program, you know, and bam-o, these people are solidly human-oriented and human mechanics even. They don't want to hear the philosophy and the surrounding things that you were talking about. Well, the humanities, they don't want to. They, of course, they've got a big job. They've got to know every muscle and all the tendons and the gland of the Harder's gland and this gland and that gland and that gland. And that was kind of a shock to me, though, to have to face up to this technical study of the human body, where they are tremendously goal-oriented. And where they get their humanities, I don't know. They had BS degrees, you know, and BA degrees, but I'm not convinced they came full-blown with a good humanities background there. So that's why I asked you about Lorentz today, because Lorentz is most remarkable and helped to firm up my feeling that maybe we can get away from man and come and stand off at a distance and look at him as the small object he is. And Fuller was talking about him last night, shouting from this speck, you know, we can't afford it. But stand far enough away from man to see him in the biological context. Well, it's true, man has this mind, has this large brain from which the mind develops. Maybe that's not enough to stop me, I don't think, though, because there are processes, synergies of synergies, which is what Fuller was saying, one of which has led to man, but I cannot for the life of me at this point, and that follows Isley's writings, see that man needs to survive or to succeed. He can go down just like the dinosaur. And sometime later, who cares how long it is? There's lots of time. Something else may better arise. Isley doesn't seem to think this way. Isley seems to, I have the impression that Isley feels man is unique and
necessary for the promotion of the universe.
Furthermore, chances are nil that anything like man exists anywhere else.
I've heard so many people debate that and say that.
That's right.
If we just figure the number of stars and the number of planets that are probably of our type.
Thank you very much.
No, it's a pleasure. And whatever we can do on these tapes, you know, what?
Well, we'll get
one of the somebody said, how do you institutionalize? Well, you don't. But it's very important that we. There isn't a speech that he ever makes that he doesn't put something new in. And whether it's an example or a new thought or what have you. So that I would like to get a full set of everything from today. And at whatever, yeah.
Well, whatever we owe them that. That's
cost,
part of our contract.
You know, let me know. And when I see Bucky later, I will assure him that we're going to get him this tape so he can listen to what went on.
Yeah,
he's going to ask me what went on, I don't know. I mean, how do I answer him? There was a lot of give and take, but we didn't come up 1, 2, 3, this is what you're going to do.
That's right. That's right.
But before I see you all again, you're going to.
Bid him Godspeed.
Right. Good night.
Good night. Good night. Did you talk to Bucky about that 5,000-word thing? About how he would like to talk? Did you ask him about that? No, I failed to be able to get in a question, and I actually became more and more reluctant to try. And I think, and I'm happy that Steve here did what he did, or and that we did with Steve. You see, I don't think he did it all himself. And I just came to the conclusion that it was relatively impertinent to try and put the questions. But I think it worked out quite well in your case. And in fact, he got as excited as any. About any particular topic or development, in your case, as he did in any part of the day, but it overshot our schedule. That doesn't make any difference. No. I agree. But he was the time that he put me down. That time, why he was very excited about what he was saying, and he had to finish it. You know.
Yeah. Can you explain that?
And what I like to try and suggest is that in what he did say, there are just lots of answers. Now, can you sort through? Can't you find some answers that would approximate answers to questions that we do have?
Well, first of all, is there any chance of getting together with you and maybe a few other people in the next few days while it's still fresh in our minds and discussing some of these things?
Well, we did this evening, and you heard Herman Wolf. That was interesting. Herman Wolf said this has never happened before. I mean, I hope it doesn't bother him too much after tomorrow when he thinks about it. But Leslie was saying the same thing today. Well, we ought to have more. He was talking about a specific group, but we ought to have more group meetings.
And it seems to be something dangerous.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm reflecting my own concern, my own orthodoxy.
Continue. maybe Buckminster's like a lot of people who figures that he will give you his wisdom, and it's up to you to figure it out. Because if he spends the time trying to tutor every person and every group in it, he could spend all of his life just trying to teach one group to understand.
That's why I think he doesn't answer any questions. He's old, and he realizes that, you know, he's only got a few more years left.
No, I don't know. That's one thing I think, didn't Herman say? That's one thing he doesn't understand. Isn't that right?
What?
He just said it not too long ago. That was the way I got it. One thing that Bucky doesn't understand, that he's not going to be here all the time. I think that he said, the way he operates, you see what I mean? He's very liberal with his energies. I think in that sense.
Well, okay.
He doesn't think he's immortal.
Well, no. Maybe not, but at least I think he figures that he should go around and dispense all this information to other people.
That's hard. No, I think, you know, he's not pushing. He's being sucked. Okay?
Okay.
Really?
Because people want to know.
He's sucked.
Yeah, very good point.
Well, there was something here which now has zapped off, but...
We've been talking at one time about this business of other human-like organisms.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you're thinking.
No, I was thinking something immediately... Well,
I just asked you a minute ago if we could, you know, if some of us could get together to discuss, not necessarily what he said, but trying to deal with some idea. You and I and a couple other people have been talking more or less in some of the same things with this energy, etc. You're a practicing biochemist, and you've probably seen it a great deal and know a little more about how useful such a concept is in your type of work. I know for myself, I don't have much practical experience. I've had a lot of philosophy, I've done a lot of philosophizing, but I've never been a philosopher or anybody who did much philosophizing except Fuller, who tries to carry it down to the actual pragmatic level. And I like his idea of a continual integration of everything. That's part of your experience in life.
Yeah, I operate on the philosophy that everything is true, if you look at it hard enough.
Well, that's what, isn't that what Bucky said? There's nothing unnatural.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a, what would you call that comparison?
Equivalent.
Not an equivalent? That'd be probably straighter than,
that'd
say, an
analog.
Yeah, truism. Equivalent.
Almost equivalent. A truism.
Yeah, the choice of saying everything's true, nothing's true, or just some things are true. If you say everything's true, well, okay, if you say nothing's true, you can't really say that because... the Descartesian thing.
Well, I think the old philosophers used to say some things are true, and let's try to find out which things are true.
If
the new philosophers...
Part of the things are true, you don't know what you're talking about, so you have to say everything's true.
Well, no. New philosophers say what?
New philosophers are getting in the vogue of saying nothing's true, nothing exists. And
nihilism.
Yeah, and it's still continuing, I'm afraid. And the modern... And Bucky Fuller is saying that everything's true.
We could mean that we figure, you know, we've got approximations.
Let me give you a...
Do you have a true approximation?
An orthodox answer, which he won't like, probably. Oh, there's an interesting anecdote here. This is Thornton Wilder. And, that was a nice thing to finish up. I didn't do it, but the eighth day is a very pregnant idea. This book takes place in southern Illinois at a little place called Coal Town. The relationship between Coal Town and Carbondale, which is Bucky Fuller's hometown, is too obvious. And I asked him yesterday when he came in if he knew Thornton Wilder, and he said, "I've known Thornton for many years. He's one of my greatest friends, and he was one of the first people to whom I spoke about synergetics." And Thornton said to me, "I think this is very important to you, maybe the most important thing in your life, and I would go very slowly with it and be sure of everything you put into it." And that was 30 years ago, and he's getting ready now, you see, synergetics and what was it, synergetic geometry.
Yeah.
I thought that was remarkable. And Thornton Wilder apparently was a navigator on a bomber in World War II, and made a great impression on Bucky, celestial navigation and mathematics. So there's a remarkable little vignette there, that's about it. This particular book is the first one that Thornton Wilder had written since 1948, and this was, I think, copyrighted 1969, you see, so 20 years he hadn't written a book. And so it was just an interesting relationship. I got a lot of catching up to do, because I've been absorbed in this thing, you know. The electrical engineers, you know, for this thing yesterday, just did a fantastic job. They complimented me on saying, "Well, it's nice to work with you." Well, this is completely the reciprocal case, you know, because all of that gear they had to throw together and.
There's one of them over there.
Who?
Tom? You're being complimented.
Oh, yeah, you're the guy who was running around and working on that.
I didn't mean to run.
You didn't? What do you mean? You fell down so fast? You had all that.
Oh, yeah.
And who is it? Tom who?
Tom Saxton.
Saxton, huh? I was just saying the electrical engineers did a really, I thought, a fantastic job. Maybe you're just doing your thing. But nevertheless, the way it goes.
The obvious
thing. Last year I gave her presentation of my view. And
what we're going to do is produce a program
about it was that so few people
with people talking about
and I made it through
like the opposite defines the thing itself. The compliment defines the object.
Yeah, right.
People talking about Fuller and then every once in a while jumping in with what he has to say about it.
Right, quick pulling up
fading
stuff.
In, cutting, whatever.
Okay.
And like when a trivial example would be when he says sucking, we might throw in just a short rap of Bucky talking about sucking.
Right.
And I think that would give a whole new outlook on the way he talks, because most people hear this a continuous thing for hours or so. And this way they'd
break it up into segments,
yeah,
thoughts, and then maybe they could tie it back together the way he usually did.
Yeah,
through his
and
speech.
We could have segments taken from all over the place. In fact, we could find some good things in his books, and maybe have someone who's good at reading, you know, to read from.
Yeah, right.
quotations from his books.
Sure. We have to limit it to here. Oh, I think we should get back into the interview, maybe.
Thinking about thinking without going insane. Rather interesting things came up there. So I have basically some readings that I've put together to make a pattern, and I don't know, after you see, again, this all has to be rewritten, because that was a year ago. I'm very reluctant, just I can take it out and read it, but I don't know what to do right now, so I got problems.
Okay, well,
anyhow, it's in Nanook News, I'm told, so I think it's Thursday evening, yeah, a week from Thursday.
I've tried to do so much theorization of myself in some of these lines to try to understand what's happening in science, especially my own theory, to see whether wildlife behavior, psychology. But
undergraduate, what do you have?
No, I'm working on a master's, just writing my
thesis. But what is your undergraduate background?
Biological oceanography.
I see.
So I was going to study behavior of cetaceans. So I went out and learned about the environment, and I'm coming and learning how to study animals, and then going to combine them eventually. But trying to, that gave me the mathematics and physics and a lot of other things. But what I'm trying to do is to understand the nature of what I'm doing and go beyond. And what I find is that, partially because of this orientation, I may have developed as a generalist, but I'm losing. It's very hard to do that and be a specialist at the same time. To remember.
You're recording us.
I can't really document.
And because it takes effort, I haven't put the effort forth. I've just sort of given up.
And maybe this is
sometimes
a large
I talk to people and say, "Oh, you don't know what you're talking about." 2 months later, it comes out. Psychology Today.
Looking outside.
It's happened to me 4 times now.
Yeah.
But they're there, and you think, "Yeah, he's right. I've known that all along, but I haven't really known it as a fact." Or else he'll take a different perspective and show you something you've never seen that way before.
Right. In fact, it makes you laugh to think about.
Yeah. One thing in science and other areas is they'll say, this is the way it's done, this is the way that's worked, and they'll give you a lot of rationalization, such as certain aspects of scientific method. But if you try to examine it, at least it appears to me that these are also based on intuition. When you go back and study ideas behind rationalism and empiricism and the whole works, these were ideas which are based on this very shaky foundation upon which we build a very solid scientific.
Based on intuition, or you can't forget the bumblebee. Based on bump, bump, bump.
Poo.
Poo, right, yeah. Pooh Bear comes down the stairs on his head, bump, bump, bump. That's the only way he's known to come down the stairs, but he thinks there must be a better way, right? And this is what that's what he was saying about the bumblebees. He goes around with his tail end and bumping around, and in the process, incidentally, he's doing good things. And this is the big point about war. We're going at doing the right thing in the wrong way, huh?
And you think science may be doing the right thing even if it's got the wrong rationalization.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what comes out of that, right? I didn't see that. Now, I mean, you're the one that drew it out of there, but yeah, I think what can we do? I mean, what holds us back from doing things, doing something from this? Certainly one, I don't know. It's too late at night to be too rational about it, but I think there is something we can come together and do. For instance, the maybe that's a time. See, Friday is all campus day, and we're supposed to go out and throw the snow off the campus so we can find the beer cans that are buried there, and so that we ought to have a pretty free day to do what we want, because we can't go out with the rakes and so on.
Yeah.
At any rate, the Bartlett Lecture Committee is meeting at 11 in the morning, and as far as I know, this is not a closed meeting.
Could you tell how you reacted to Bucky Fuller's lectures and his philosophy?
Like I said, it was like seeing a light in the forest. Sometimes I felt like a one-eyed man in a blind man's country, and I saw there was another guy that had an eye going.
You felt sort of
a personal alliance between you and him.
Oh yeah, I said to myself, there's me, 76 years old.
I think a lot of people
recognized his thinking patterns because they're the same ones I use. Except I'd gotten discouraged because I couldn't sell my stuff. So I figure if I'm going to be 76 sometime, I might as well just write it down, and if somebody wants it sometime, it'll exist. Some of the stuff I've written, some of it I haven't.
So, but is this a major change in your philosophy, or is it just sort of a decision?
A nice reinforcement, you might say.
How many people in say that audience last night do you think really felt this sort of the same sort of personal alliance with Bucky Fuller? Who noticed their own thoughts in his words?
I'd say quite a few. I'd say there weren't too many inventors there. I see way too many scientists. I think basically scientists are stupid, otherwise they wouldn't be scientists. Since they can't invent anything, they just look at things the way they are and analyze them. And then they give you nice pictures of the parts, which is useful if you're an inventor sometimes, because at least you have the descriptions of the stuff you need to put something new together. But it's amazing how stupid the scientists are because they don't see it.
Well, sir, wouldn't you agree, though, that science would have to be a far better alternative to mythology? That it does have a valid role in our society.
Unfortunately, yes, that's true. Not only does it have a valid role, but it's almost displaced engineering in some places. For example, the federal government puts out all kinds of money for research and education, which only tells us in numbers and figures what we know already. As a matter of fact, I co-authored a paper which proved that long lists were harder to learn than short ones. And it was paid for by a federal grant, and the guy that I work for is still doing it, under federal grants, of course. And then they wondered why they don't get anything out of research and education, because the research is done scientifically, where you take the thing and you break it down into parts. It isn't intended to build something new. It isn't intended to answer the question, how can it be done better? It's intended to answer the question, how does it work?
And from that, you can find the best way to do it. If you know how it works, then you can find the best way to go about doing it.
This is what I told my boss. I said, now listen, when we write a paper, we shouldn't just stop with the conclusions of how it works. We should say what the implications are, what can be done with it. He says, oh no, that's not the way you write a scientific paper. That's not the format that's required, because the other is just speculation. You don't know it, you haven't proved it. So you just hope that someone has the nerve to go through all that dry stuff and figure it out himself.
You consider yourself an inventor, and also as an inventor, you consider yourself also an engineer. You consider engineers and inventors
okay.
similar.
There's two ways of thinking that I'm dealing with. There's the scientific thinking, which takes a thing as it is, breaks it down, and says what the parts are, or how it's different from something else. It's no good for invention. An inventor has to take a lot of different things and put them together in a different way. He has to answer the question, how do you do it better, or how do you make something happen? And then he goes backwards to find out everything he can about things that make that kind of thing happen. A scientist just looks at what happens and divides it up. All right. So if you're going to design something new and really get something new, you can't take what you already know and divide it down into the parts and leave it at that. And in education, this is what is being done right now. They say, well, if we just analyze what happens with a learner and have behavioral objectives, we can make him learn this, 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 and this, which is fine, but you don't produce creative, innovative kind of thinking. You produce a better way of making people memorize history. You get the difference? What you should ask is, why are we doing it? What is the reason for it? not how do we get 80% of them to remember 80% of the facts when we give them a task. And that thing, the 90-90 is actually what they're shooting for. 90% of them get 90% of the material when they're given a test. This is supposed to be the great new thing in education. It's called behavioral objectives. So you know exactly what it is that you want. Well, what you want isn't in exact terms. What you want is an ability to deal with and solve problems of an unstated kind. Any problem.
Undiscovered problem.
Undiscovered problems, that's right.
But Minister Fuller brought up something that was very interesting, and that's a concern for mankind. And that seems like in all that has evolved, you know, all our technology has completely ignored that. And I'd say this concern for mankind can be integrated well with your ideas and science.
Yeah, that's right. Great. Which is another thing. He's against dividing humanities and science because they work together beautifully. And if you divide them, you never put them together. They have to work together. I don't see how a person can possibly function if he's going to be innovative if he doesn't know a lot of humanities and a lot of science. It's just that he has to know the concepts rather than the facts. And in school, we concentrate on facts rather than concepts. Like in history, we learned what happened. We don't think about why it happened or what it would really be like to be there. I thought about the French and Indian War and decided that whichever side I was on, I couldn't possibly be on the other side. Like, I'm in America and I kind of favor the Viet Cong, you know. Possibly emotional reaction against it. But if I were in America and was a Frenchman during that time, I couldn't possibly be in favor of the English or vice versa, simply because it wasn't set up that way. The two lifestyles were totally different. You don't think about it, you just memorize the facts and you kind of assume the English are the good guys and the French are the bad guys. You don't look at it from the point of view of the lifestyles are different and they conflict over this line. You get a generality. If lifestyles are different so that they conflict in the same place, you're going to have some kind of war or, you know, a fight. And it doesn't have to be one is a good guy and one is a bad guy. That's just the way it is. Then you start thinking about, well, how can these things be resolved? So that both parties don't have to change that much. Anyhow, how to think is the problem. And that's what he talked about.
He's giving two lectures. His normal fee is $5,000 per lecture.
You know,
actually
geology,
came off pretty well.
He'll talk about that and not thinking or something.
Have to talk about
how to think.
With
but you really get to the...
Yeah, take it.